We turn now to Bill Resnick's conversation with Travis Watkins and Alexander Bradbury, including a musical interlude featuring some of Bradbury's revisions of popular songs.
Travis Watkins, welcome to KVU.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Travis Watkins was, and hopefully will be again, a mechanic at a General Motors plant in Wyoming, Michigan. Travis was recently fired for warning his fellow workers that two other workers were suspected of having the coronavirus and had been removed from the factory on a stretcher. Travis will tell the story, then we'll get into discussing the views of workers about working during the epidemic and about the UAW, that's the United Auto Workers Union, and about the group that Travis founded. It's called Unite All Workers for Democracy, UAWD. Very clever, Travis. Tell us about why you were fired and how it happened.
Okay, well, so on March 16th, I received a few phone calls from inside the plant. Some workers were telling me that a couple of members had been driven out on a medical cart by security wearing face masks and that they were being removed from the plant for suspected COVID-19 symptoms. I reached out to my local leadership, part of the executive board for my local, and in my efforts to try to organize and to protect these workers, I reached out to them for that purpose, and I did not hear back from my local leadership. And the very next morning that I came into work, I was told by a supervisor that I was immediately being put on suspension pending an investigation. And when I inquired to what the suspension was in regards to, he said he didn't know. I had him call labor management at our company, and they weren't able to provide me with any information. So the following day, I was told that at 10 o'clock, we were going to have a meeting. And at that meeting, I met with plant management and had an international representative with me at that meeting. And I was told I was being terminated. And my reason for termination, they quoted a shop rule violation 2, which was assaulting, fighting, threatening, coercing, or interfering with employees or management. And they provided a Facebook post that I had made inside of a private Facebook group that deals with on-job site conditions and union member concerns. All the post said was it had been reported to me some people had been walked out of GM with suspected COVID-19 symptoms and that I had reported it to local leadership. And that was the reason that they used to terminate me.
Your discussions with both the union leadership and the company, to the extent you could talk to them, you were asking that they would disinfect the factory, and you were asking for a lot more safety equipment, especially for the workers who were cleaning up the place.
Yeah, right? So, I mean, that's correct. So what happened is, on March 16th, I noticed a General Motors salaried worker passing out bottles of cleaner to my bargaining unit as well as to the GMCH bargaining unit. And I stopped him because he was with one of my workers, and I asked him what was going on and what they were doing. And he said, well, we're beginning some cleanup workstation areas to disinfect for COVID-19. And I noticed there was no personal protection equipment, that these employees hadn't been trained properly on the proper ways to mitigate and clean up for COVID-19. And I said, you know, unless you guys can provide the proper protocol as listed by, you know, CDC or OSHA, you know, with face masks and the gloves and some requiring, you know, Tyvek suits and whatnot to do this cleanup, that, you know, we weren't going to do it, and it was a health and safety issue, and he needed to address that. Obviously, I was met with frustration and anger from him because he had to stop what he was doing and see what he could do about that. But again, the following morning, I was terminated.
You've been really active in the union, co-founding Unite All Workers for Democracy, and I read the article in Labor Notes about the firing. You were thinking of running for the president of the local union. My understanding is that the Facebook page must have been provided to the management from somebody else in the union. Do you think there was some kind of collusion between union leadership, who doesn't do, who are very who want to stay in office, and any challenge to their position gets met with hostility? And that happens in a lot of workplaces. The union leadership doesn't want to be challenged, and they collude with management.
In fact, that absolutely did happen in my case. it was reported to me and verified from another very good source through my investigation that part of the local management, in fact, did take my post and my messaging to the executive board and took that to management and colluded with them to initiate my termination. That's, in fact, it is a fact.
Travis, one issue I wanted you to talk about, you know the people in the plant, you're elected to the e-board of the union. How do workers feel about being forced to work during the pandemic? It seems to me there's people have to earn an income and pay the rent or pay the mortgage and buy food. Most people have a family. So they, on the one hand, they want to keep working. On the other hand, they don't want to bring that COVID, they don't want to die or get really sick or especially bring it back to their families. What do workers think about what you're doing, which is challenging the company? There are some who are really afraid of challenging the company, right, because the company always has this sword above their heads. We'll move to Mexico or Brazil, or we'll switch all the work to some other plant in the United States unless you knuckle down. Unless you give in, actually, and keep quiet and do your job very fast. How does that all work out? What's your sense of the working class people now facing this tremendous pressure just to keep a decent job?
People are fearful of, you know, obviously coming into exposure of this. As you may know, the companies and the international union had another joint task force with this health and safety issue. It's a lot of people's belief that this another jointism or jointness with the companies has left members at risk. Instead of addressing international coming and addressing issues on a local level to provide information, education, and support health and safety in the plants, they again partnered with the company in this joint task force, and it was delayed in shutting down these plants. The response is now is coming to an agreement to when these plants will reopen. And again, not using any local leadership at the local level to address the issue. It seems to me and many other members that they're kind of putting the company, mitigating the company's profit loss in this issue with the COVID-19 versus the health and safety of their members. So people are afraid. They don't want to lose their job. They're afraid to speak out for the reasons that I find myself in now. But as a local leader, that's my responsibility to stand up for the membership and to make sure that they're safe on the job. That's just what we're trained to do. That's what we're supposed to do. And it's the right thing to do.
Travis, I read about you on Labor Notes. The article was very informative. It also, at the end, you're trying to keep your family alive. You have a GoFundMe foundation opportunity there.
Right. I started a GoFundMe page because myself and my family are obviously with this attack from the company on my livelihood. I'm now without employment. I filed for unemployment, but the company is fighting me on that so that there's an appeal process there to even get my unemployment, and that could take weeks or months. Also, I have high prescription costs for my family. They have some of my children have medical needs, and I'm without insurance. So that's the reason why I started the GoFundMe page, is to kind of get caught up on some bills and some of the prescription costs that I have for my family. And I've had some great contributions, and people have been very generous, and I very much appreciate it, and my family appreciates it very much.
Travis Watkins, keep up the good work. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks, Bill. I really appreciate the time and the interest that you've taken in giving me the opportunity to speak out on this health and safety issue to keep the membership safe. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
If you tell me how much misery working people will put up with, I'll tell you how much misery we're going to get stuck with. That's the words of Frederick Douglass, and he hasn't been wrong yet. Said we don't get all we pay for, but we pay for all we get, because power concedes nothing. Power concedes nothing. Power concedes nothing without a demand. Never has, never will.
Hi, Hi, Alexandra Bradbury. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Bill. It's great to be here and have a chance to send solidarity and good wishes to all those great folks in Portland, where I lived for many years.
Alexandra Bradbury is the same Al Bradbury who worked for SEIU Local 49 in Portland. She was also one of the hosts of Labor Radio on this radio station. She went from Local 49 and KBOO to become an apprentice journalist at the monthly magazine Labor Notes. Now she has become a co-editor of Labor Notes. Today we're going to discuss the coronavirus, how unionized workers and also workers who have no union are responding, including response by every level of service work, especially the lowest paid. They have a slogan, from invisible to essential. And they could continue, I guess, from the minimum wage to maybe even a living wage, maybe even get some respect. So Al, I just interviewed Travis Watkins, who I learned about through the Labor Notes website. For you, Travis's story is just one of many that Labor Notes carries, stories of worker struggles that the establishment press, even local papers, doesn't cover. Or if they do, it's from the employer's point of view. Labor Notes is really different. Tell us about Labor Notes.
Labor Notes has been around for 40 years and has always existed to create a forum for rank-and-file workers, rank-and-file union members, as well as non-union workers, to connect with one another, to learn from one another, and as you say, to tell their stories, which often go untold. We've published a monthly magazine now for more than 40 years, which often carries stories written by workers describing how we organized the strike, how we won this demand, how we're fighting this issue in our workplace, written for other workers to read and learn from and teach one another. We also organize conferences. We do a big international conference every 2 years, so we had to postpone it this year due to the pandemic. And we organize local events, troublemaker schools, secrets of a successful organizer trainings. Portland has been host to many of these events where local union and non-union workplace activists teach each other, learn from one another, nuts and bolts strategy to build a more militant and fighting and winning labor movement. And lately, during the pandemic, we've been doing tons of organizing, trying to provide support to people who are fighting to make their jobs safer, to, in some cases, shut their workplace down for safety or win the rights and protections they need. We've been doing lots of webinars and conference calls and publishing, you know, 4 times as many articles as usual because there's so much going on, so much workplace activity to support and spread around so other people can follow one another's lead.
Right. Al, tell us about some of the other struggles. Travis Watkins was one of many, 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 including many others in the UAW, United Auto Workers Union.
Yes, the auto workers are one of many sectors where one of the immediate things workers did was organize to demand to close down non-essential work, auto plants and many other kinds of plants and workplaces. The employers were slow to close down, you know, wanted to squeeze as much profit out as they could, and as workers discovered that their coworkers or supervisors were getting sick, you know, experienced the reality of not being able to socially distance at work, not having the protective gear they need, auto workers, you know, had walkouts and demanded to shut their plants down, which they did, although the auto companies are certainly making rumblings about wanting to reopen those as soon as possible. So that happened in many sectors and is still happening. There are also less organized, large-scale sick-outs. People may have seen lots of meat and poultry plant workers are not going into work in large numbers and sometimes effectively closing down plants. And then there's workers who are considered essential and are being asked to continue to work, who are organizing to demand the protective gear they need, extra compensation for the risks that they're taking, to rearrange their work or make changes to make it safer and better. So one that I found really heartening early in the crisis was a wildcat strike by bus drivers in Detroit, who they didn't wait for the employer to decide. They shut down the buses and said, before we go back to work, we have some demands about how the buses need to operate differently to be safer during this crisis. And they won all of their demands. And one of them was no collection of bus fares for the duration of the crisis. It certainly makes drivers safer during the pandemic because they don't have such close contact with people. It's also the collection of the fare, the enforcement of the fare, is one of the sites of conflict and violence that puts drivers at risk of workplace violence every day. And in the recession moment, it's also a great boon to the public. So that kind of change where workers got together and said, we see how we could improve the situation at our work and demanded it and won it, that spirit is something I hope we can keep even after the crisis is over.
Al Bradbury of Labor Notes. one more issue that really is quite inspiring in some ways. All those service workers now rallying under the banner from invisible to essential. It's a great slogan. All those delivery truck drivers and home care workers and cleaners and grocery workers and health workers, many at the lowest level, cooks and restaurant workers, they're now being seen as essential, which we always knew and tried to argue. This is sort of an incredible wake-up call in some ways, and it fuels demands for respect and a decent wage.
Absolutely. I think there's both the sense of the public awareness of the importance of so many workers who are often overlooked, and the workers' own awareness of the power that they have, that society really can't continue without them. In terms of the public awareness, of course, it's long overdue to celebrate sanitation workers, transit workers, postal and delivery workers, grocery and warehouse workers, healthcare workers, you know, who are often, their voices are ignored and suppressed and their concerns are pushed down by management. But this is a moment of tremendous opportunity for workers to build connections with the public, because all of us are seeing every day the risks workers are taking, their centrality to our lives. The CEOs all work from home or take time off. It doesn't really have any impact on you and me. But all of these regular and, as you say, often underpaid workers are tremendously important. And so I think it's a great time to make the point about why we need to support and pay well and sustain our public services, why, for instance, we shouldn't privatize the post office as corporate interests want to do, or allow them to contract out to the lowest bidder things like transit and sanitation. But it's also a moment when workers can realize and seize upon the leverage that they have, because a company like Amazon has been forced to admit that, as high-tech as they are, all of their work depends on human labor. And so you've seen these protests and walkouts at Amazon. Amazon was forced to give a $2 an hour raise during this period. Amazon has also retaliated. Like, they see that workers are getting a sense of their power, and they want to try to suppress that. They've fired several workers, both tech and warehouse workers. But the crisis moment really shows that there are all of these choke points where workers' labor is essential to producing the profits and to keeping the public going. And it shows why workers have the power to organize. And I think that is part of why we're seeing this real ferment, both in union workplaces where rank and filers are getting organized and making demands without necessarily waiting for their union leaders even to take the lead, and non-union workers too. And it's a great time for unions to make connections with non-union workers and organize them. And I think one more thing that's been inspiring to me to see is workers who are taking this moment to think bigger about what kinds of changes could be made in their work in the public interest. In particular, these General Electric workers who held pickets around the country to demand that their plants, where usually they make jet engines, be converted to making ventilators. And you have auto workers in Oshawa for GM, whose plant is in the process of being closed down, who have been saying for a year now, well, we should convert our plant to green vehicle production, and are now saying, well, let's also use it to make masks and medical equipment that's immediately needed. In a moment of crisis, business interests will seize on it and try to use it as a chance to accelerate their agenda. But I think it's also a chance for workers to say, when things come to a halt, let's take the opportunity to come up with our agenda and say, let's reopen on our terms and take this as a moment to pivot towards the needs of workers and the needs of the community and reimagine how our jobs could be when we come back to them.
Al Bradbury, really good talking to you. You're an essential worker from my point of view. Thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Thanks so much, Bill.
That was Alexandra Bradbury singing I'll Organize, because that's what we'll need to do to survive. And before that, Bradbury and Travis Watkins talking with Bill Resnick about workers doing just that.